Today we're joined by Nicole Saunders. Nicole is the Director of Community at Zendesk, where she oversees strategy and management of the online community, user groups, brand advocates, and webinars.
I have a team of four, and we are dedicated to building community at Zendesk. Every organization defines community a little bit differently and what falls into that bucket. And for us, it's any customer-focused program organized around the idea of connecting users with one another to share knowledge.
I'm intrigued. Do you have a special place in the community for your kind of top 10% of customers?
Absolutely. And I think that this is one of the most important things that any community manager can do. You may not be able to go through and engage tens of thousands of people, but if you can identify those top people and really invest in them, they can help all of that. So, you know, like ripples in a pond, they will help reach out to all of those other folks.
Most community managers I chat to want to be sat at every table, not just one table. That ultimately, it's like having a customer in the room, which you can just ask questions to. Like, why wouldn't you want that?
Community touches along every point of the customer journey, so it makes a ton of sense.
Welcome, Nicole. Hello and welcome to the Digital Community Leaders podcast, where we chat with community managers, champions, and founders about their experience leading and supporting digital community. My name is Pete Heslop, and I lead the team at Steadfast Collective, and we exist to craft digital applications that bring people together. Today, we're joined by Nicole Saunders. Nicole is the Director of Community at Zendesk, where she oversees strategy and management of the online community, user groups, brand advocates, and webinars. She also hosts the Conversations with Zendesk podcast. Welcome, Nicole.
Thanks so much for having me, Pete.
It is so good to have you here. So obviously I just gave a small taste of what you do. Why don't you tell us a little bit about more about what you do and maybe how you first got stuck into the world of community?
Yeah, so I have sort of that bulleted list of areas of responsibility with my job, but I have a team of four and we are dedicated to building community at Zendesk. And so every organization defines community a little bit differently and what falls into that bucket. And for us, it's any customer-focused program that is organized around the idea of connecting users with one another to share knowledge. And so that includes our online community, which is where we started. We also do community events a couple of times a month. Some of them are large-scale webinars that we do with our product teams. Some of them are really small, roundtable, knowledge-sharing kinds of activities. We also have the user groups program. So those are meetups that are led for users by users. And we launched that about a year ago. So that's really been taking off. And then we work very cross-functionally all through the organization. But one of our biggest partnerships is with the customer marketing team, where we have that brand ambassador program, which is called the Zendesk Luminaries. So my day-to-day is overseeing the management of all of those programs, tying the strategy together. And I spend a lot of time looking for opportunities to connect the things that we offer into various business goals and objectives. So meeting with a lot of people on other teams, finding out what they want and figuring out how we can best support that within the community. As far as how I got into it, I actually started my career as a freelance writer. So I used to write for magazines and do like feature articles. This was back when the internet was still new-ish, I guess. And eventually, all of those print publications moved online. And so I had to learn how to build a following and how to get people engaging with me online because all of my work became pay-per-click, right? And so I had to really figure out how to drive people to go read my articles to make money on the writing that I was doing. And in the process of that, I learned a lot about communications, about brand building, about, you know, building a following, and really ultimately building a community. And so at that point, since I was already freelancing, I started doing social media and brand and communications for other small businesses. Eventually from there, I joined a social media agency as an intern and stayed with them as a contractor all the way up until I was their senior community manager. And we had actually built out a whole community wing of their offerings. And then from there, I got involved with tech startups and eventually got recruited out to Silicon Valley. And then eventually ended up at Zendesk. So it's been a long journey of building different skills and pursuing different opportunities. But I think community is my home. I love making those connections and helping people out.
That's so fun. And when you landed at Zendesk, was there already something in play or were you starting from the ground up?
Zendesk had had a community, so they'd actually launched it back in 2008 when they launched their first community platform. And it was sort of co-managed by a couple of different teams across the company. So they had one support agent who was helping answer questions in the community, but there was no one person or one team that was overseeing strategy for the whole thing. And so I was the first person that was brought on to start to pull all of that together, you know, come up with community guidelines, come up with consistent governance, and really build out. And then all of the rest of those programs I mentioned at the top of the conversation, we've built out since I joined.
What I love about your kind of resume from when you started working was it touches on so many different things. And what I see when I talk to community managers is often you're such wonderful generalists. Like, you're so great at understanding obviously the customer and the members, but also how we can market to them, how we can support them, how we can use this technology. And it's only, I imagine, when you get to a larger scale community teams, when you start finding, you know, your community data analysts and your kind of your real niche tasks. But generally, community managers are so broad in their skill set, and that's so wonderful. And I guess writing is a really great place to start that, because writing as an online community is pretty core to what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, so much of it is written communication. And, you know, to that end, my team and I actually have moved around the business a couple times, but we sit on the communications team today. But I think you're right. Most community managers, you know, most community programs start out with one person trying to do all of the things for a group of people. And I often liken community management to like being a really great party host. And if you're hosting a party, you're thinking about, okay, I'm providing a space, I'm creating ambiance, I'm probably cooking and providing food, I'm coming up with activities, I'm putting together invitations. And it's the same kind of thing. You have to be able to do all of the different pieces and parts that make an experience great for somebody and help them understand what it is and welcome them into it. So it is definitely a great career path, I think, for you know, what you might call like a Renaissance person or a jack of all trades, somebody that likes a lot of variety, that has a lot of different skill sets. And you're right. Then when you get more senior, you know, on my team now, I have one person that's dedicated to webinars, one person that's dedicated to the online community, one that's dedicated to data and process, one that's dedicated to those programs. But we had to get pretty big and pretty well established to be able to specialize that way.
So in September, we launched the Digital Community Leaders Report, which was a 6-month project to better understand the community profession. The report's available at communityleadersurvey.com, where you can download your free copy or you can go and order your own printed copy. Your quote in here is one of my favorite quotes, and it was around, and it had a real impact when I talked to people, especially around how the Zendesk team, community team, has moved from being support into marketing, and that just makes more sense for you as a business. Could you dive into that a little bit?
Absolutely. The first thing I'll say is that I have a lot of conversations with different business leaders about, well, where should the community team sit and who should they roll up to? And my favorite answer to that question is, wherever there's a manager that believes in them and supports them. Because in my view, community teams should be so cross-functional and so involved with all of the different parts of the business that it kind of doesn't matter where exactly they sit, because they're going to be working with partners across the business. Now, that being said, it is important to be someplace that will facilitate you being cross-functional, having broad awareness of the company, and not being funneled into a limiting set of objectives or goals. And we started in the support org because we originally were just a support channel. That was what our community was for. It was there to answer user questions, sort of like almost like a public ticket, right? And then as we started listening to our customers and hearing what they really needed and wanted, we needed to build out other programs. You know, the first thing they said was, we would really love the opportunity to speak with your product managers and actually hear from them directly. And so we started building out this whole events arm, and that's very clearly a marketing kind of motion, right? You don't usually hear support teams hosting events. And so as we built that out and we started really establishing more of those cross-functional relationships, what ended up happening is we were working on a project with another team, and eventually it became clear that we needed to be someplace where we weren't just getting measured on our support metrics. And we're still measured on those today. We still report into the support team about that. But we also wanted to be able to work on product marketing and hosting these events and doing these programs that helped build up our relationship with customers in a different way. And so that just really made a ton of sense for us to be in a different part of the business that was a little bit more consistently connected with all of those pieces. And even from there, you know, within marketing, we sat on what was called the digital events team for a while. And then just this past summer, okay, we combined forces with the customer marketing team and moved into communications. And so it keeps shuffling and shifting. But I'll tell you what, I meet with leaders from every part of the business every week.
Exactly. And again, that's what I hear. And when I talk to people is ultimately you're on the pulse of what the customer is thinking and doing. So whether it's a meeting about pricing, product, support, whatever it is, most community managers I chat to want to be sat at every table, not just one table. And ultimately it's like having a customer in the room, which you can just ask questions to, like, why wouldn't you want that?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you think about it, community touches along every point of the customer journey. So it makes a ton of sense. We're not just pre-sales. We're not just support. We're not just, you know, working with expansion or adoption. The community is the always on, always available thing that lands in between all of those other touch points. And we may see a customer from the first time they come to check something out all the way through until their company has grown extremely large and built really complex use cases out over years. And so it's part of why it's so important for us to be connected into all of the other parts of the business who tend to deal with more of a phase of a customer life cycle or a specific, you know, aspect of it. We're there. The customers come back and talk to us in between all of those other things that they do.
We'll jump into the report in a second, but I'm intrigued. Do you have a program or a special place in the community for your kind of top 10% of customers, like the folk who are maybe not just enterprise, but are the ones that are kind of really invested in helping the community in a kind of self-sufficient way?
Absolutely. And I think that this is one of the most important things that any community manager can do. In fact, I was advising a peer the other week and they were saying, gosh, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm trying to do all these things with all of these people and get all this done. And I said, focus on your top 10% of users. You may not be able to go through and engage tens of thousands of people, but if you can identify those top people and really invest in them, they can help all of that. So, you know, like ripples in a pond, they will help reach out to all of those other folks. And so we've had a couple of different programs over the years. Right now, the key one for our top users in the community is our community moderator program. And those are individuals who are super active in our community. They're great about sharing their knowledge. They're good at answering questions for other people. And so what we do is we look for people that are already doing that. They've been around the community for a little while. They're answering people's questions. They seem to know what they're doing. And then we invite them into the program. So it's very organic. And, you know, and sometimes that's slow growth. And sometimes we have little waves where we get a bunch of people that it makes sense. But then we invite those people into the moderator program. And they do have a designated space where they can just talk to each other and they can talk to my team. So they can let us know when they see something in the online community that maybe we need to spend some attention on. They can talk to each other, which is really amazing because I will see them literally swarm around questions. I'm like, I'm trying to help this user. I'm like 90% of the way there. Does anybody know this last 10%? And they'll like work together and then go post the answer out publicly. These are all volunteers. They are worldwide. Some of them have been in the program for 10 years or more. They're really, really loyal folks. We love them. And in exchange for that help and the support, like I said, one, they get that private space where they can talk to each other, talk to us. We do try to expedite some of their support so that, you know, when they're struggling, when they've got tickets with us, we're trying to get them up and running faster. One, we know that they're already experts, so they don't need an entry-level support agent to start the conversation. And two, we know that the quicker that we get them up and running, the quicker that they can get back to their jobs and the more supportive their management is going to be of them spending time in our community. We also offer them opportunities to meet with product managers as a small group. So they vote every month on who they want to talk to. And that person comes in and has a private call with them. And we look for other opportunities to do perks like discounted certifications and things. But I think that those programs are really important. And in fact, in 2022, that was a key part of our strategy. So we're going to just focus really hard on these top 10% active people and really build out those programs. And it has paid dividends. We've really seen extremely positive impacts for those users, for the community as a whole. It's all grown, it's expanded, and we have these wonderful relationships with these great brand ambassadors.
I love that. No, that's a great story. And I think when you're growing those kind of programs, it's the same when you're growing a business or kind of any kind of group of people, there'll be a smaller subset of group where if they understand what the mission, the values, the plan is, then the next layer down, it will get slightly watered down, but it's the only way to spread further. Like, you can't be the person who talks to every person in the organization. So you just need to make it as clear as possible to the folk around you, the ones who are kind of in the boat with you, and be like, right, go and spread. Like, that's our values. You know, that's how we do it. And what I love about when you find those folk in your community is they're the great ones who step in and go like, actually, that's not a Zendesk thing. We don't do that in that community here. I see where you're going, but that's not what we do here. And it's always fun when you get to watch somebody else do that, and you don't have to come in like the teacher being like, oh, that's not part of our culture here. As somebody else almost steps up and does it. And that's always fun to see. It's when you know you've got something healthy going on.
And it's so important to your point. One team can't do it all. You know, my team is mostly based in the States, but our community is worldwide. So it's really helpful to have some other users that are online while we're all asleep at 3 a.m. So it's helpful in that way. And sometimes it's just really great where we'll see something and be like, okay, we better like draft a response and do it. Oh, Brandon jumped in and told everybody what's going on. Okay, we don't have to go deal with that. He's de-escalated that, or he's handled that, or whatever it is. So, you know, it's incredibly valuable. And let's be honest, most people are going to be more influenced by hearing from a peer about something than they are from a brand. And so there's huge power in enabling those people to enthusiastically represent you in other spaces.
And they might natively speak their language, and they may be more culturally aligned with that person, right?
Absolutely. And sometimes they might empathize and then come back to us. And
yeah, exactly. And I think having that wide voice, especially when you are such a global company, just helps, because somebody on the other side of the globe, a sentence might get misconstrued, et cetera, but somebody, you know, with a different cultural background is going to be able to understand the micro kind of changes in the tone of voice and whatnot.
Totally. And that's a great point as well. We've definitely had folks in our moderator program in the past that have spoken other languages, represented other cultures. And I shouldn't say even in the past, we do today. And it's been incredibly helpful. Sometimes they'll come back and say, hey, you guys are pushing this webinar out. This isn't going to make sense where I live. Like, people don't know what phrase means, or, you know, this is a very American way to say that. We're like, oh, okay, great. let's reword that a little bit, or let's adjust it, or that kind of thing.
So you were involved in providing some expert analysis in the report, which was fantastic. Thank you. When you received the report and you've given it a read, was there anything in here that kind of stood out, jumped out to you, which you want to share your thoughts and feelings on today?
So overall, the thing that surprised me the most was that nothing surprised me in the report. And there's a good reason that that is interesting. And I think it is that over the years, there's been so much excitement about communities, which is fantastic. But sometimes it's gotten conflated with the viral nature of social media or those kinds of things. And I thought that this report did a really good job of being like, hey, communities are about human beings that want to talk to each other and connect and share knowledge. And if you can create an easy way for them to do that and recognize them for it, you're going to be successful with community. It's not easy, right? It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of consistency over time to build up those relationships and that trust and that community. But there's no secret magic to it. There's no growth hacking behind communities. It's really just about making it as easy as possible for people to connect with other people who have knowledge that they want to discuss and share. And at the end of the day, that's all there is to it. And I love the way that this report really lays that out about how people want to connect, what they want to connect around, how to get started in doing those things. And it sounds simple. You know, you and I both know that there's a lot of pieces to that, just like we were talking about being a generalist and all of the aspects that involves to host that party and make it successful. But that was really what stood out to me across the whole thing, was I was like, hey, this is coming back and saying there's no secret magic to it. It's just hard work and consistency and delivering on what people are asking you for.
And I think the slow and steady nature of building a community lends itself to the longevity of it, right? So we see in marketing world, whether it is kind of direct to consumer or whether it's new channels like TikTok or whatever it is, you see kind of rise and falls. With community, you just kind of see this constant. People were always going to want to talk to other people. And it's just, you might need to change where that happens or how that happens. But ultimately, the slow and steady nature of community is what gives it the longevity. And actually, when you're talking about a business which has been around for a while, such as Zendesk and so on, you know, stability is good. I don't want to speak on your behalf, but I would imagine, you know, stability, like stuff happening regularly and consistency is what I want in a business. And as I imagine also what is great at Zendesk is kind of stuff gradually going upwards, not wild rides of peaks and troughs.
Definitely. When you think about our customers, a lot of them started as small startups and grew over time and our business grew with them. And to that end, it is a long-term relationship. It is important to build the trust and to be consistent. And like I said, I think a lot of people go, oh, it's online. It's like social media. If we just do one great video and it goes viral, we'll get 100,000 people engaged in our community. They might show up, but they're going to leave just as quickly. The metaphor that I always like to use is think about the last time that you as an adult made a friend. You probably had to run into somebody repeatedly at some place where you had a common interest. And at first you only talk to them about that common interest. And then over time, maybe you find some other interests that you talk about. And then maybe at some point you go do an activity together outside of the thing that you met through. And then your relationship really starts to bloom. How long does that take? Probably months, if not years. And so when you're building a community, you're trying to build relationships with people where they're making maybe not personal friends, but certainly friendly connections with people where they're coming back and engaging over time. It's going to take a while. And you have to be offering something, like I said, it's got to be really easy for them to do it, because if it's hard, they just won't log on. And it's got to provide value that's useful to them every day. And in fact, going back to the conversation about our move from support to marketing, I think that's one of the keys, is when all you do is support, people only show up when they have a problem, when they have a question. And once they get it answered, they leave. And so it was very hard to build a community of relationships when people just come in a couple times a year and they'd show up and get what they needed off the shelf and then they were out. And so it's really important to understand what your audience needs every day or every week. What's a thing that is going to make sense for them to come and connect with and work on over time? And, you know, one of the things we realized for us is we work primarily with support professionals. So let's talk about not just the software and how to use it. That's certainly a big, important part of what we do. But we also need to talk about things that are just relevant to support organizations. How do I help my agents be better? How do we manage the mental health struggles of a stressful kind of workforce? How do we schedule people appropriately? All of those kinds of things. And now if people are able to develop their career and their skill sets and something else, now you've got a reason for them to show up on a regular basis and start to build those relationships out.
Do you know the concept of a value bank? Have you heard this thought before?
I have not.
Okay, so the idea is very similar to what you just mentioned, but kind of explained in a bit of a metaphor, is that if you try and make a withdrawal from one of your community members or somebody in your audience without depositing regularly into that bank, it's just going to be really difficult. So if you reached out to your community and you said, hey, we would love you to actually stop what you're doing and go trial the new beta we've just released, but you haven't been spending the last few years constantly investing in that community, then it's just going to fall on dead ears. But actually, if you spent the last, you know, 2-3 years regularly providing value, showing up with webinars, helping make introductions, you know, remembering that this person's got a cat that's poorly, you know, all of those kind of things, you're building up this value. So when you do go to make a withdrawal, like, actually, we are releasing, you know, version 16, we would love you to check it out first and just let us know what your thoughts are on it. That takes time from somebody and they're already busy. It's not their job. So that takes a withdrawal. But if you're already doing it when there's money in the bank, it falls so much easier for everybody. It just makes everyone's life easier. And I think we see it a lot with creators where they try and make a withdrawal too early. They release their merch line too early. They release their ebook or whatever it is too early, and it just kind of falls. But actually, if you've been investing regularly, that's when it's going to flow.
That makes a ton of sense. And I have heard that metaphor for like friendships or relationships. Obviously, it applies well to a community. And I think it's really key. And one of the things you have to remember as a business is sometimes that withdrawal is going to be you release something and people don't like it. And or it's missed an element, or you've released an MVP. And if you want people to be patient and give you feedback and stick with you while you get to the V2, right? You use that example of a beta. You have to have that trust built up with them in the first place. And if you have that trust, they're going to say, okay, guys, it's an MVP. Let's give you some feedback on it. As opposed to if you don't have that trust, you might release it and people are going to go, well, what the heck is this? I don't like it, and leave. And so I think it is so important. You know, we talk in general terms a lot in communities about how important it is to build relationships and build trust. But this is why, because people are going to run into it challenges with various things. And you want them to trust you and stick with you and be part of it as you work through those challenges and not just be like, oh, well, this is bad and I don't like it and I'm just out of here. The other key is it does give you that audience of people that you can activate and, you know, engage. And when there is a problem, you've got a couple people you can tap. I cannot tell you how many times we've reached out to our moderators and said, like, hey, people don't seem to be responding well to this thing. Can you guys hop on a call with our product manager and tell us why? Tell us what's going on here. Or, hey, we're rolling out this thing. We know it's going to be a little contentious. Can you guys help us get the word out about the fact that this is just phase one and there's more coming? Whatever it is. And those things are really, really important. So I love that idea of the value bank. That's a great way to think about it.
And obviously the folk you're talking to, they're running support or support teams. And I imagine your support team at Zendesk is on Zendesk. However, you know, they're the ones using your product in a different way to you, and they're using it from a different angle, and they're using it for different size customer bases. So actually getting that feedback is really important, because it's hard for you to step into their shoes. You know, unless you've been there and done it, or you're actively doing it, it's going to be hard for you to really actually understand what are their current pain points this year. They're probably different to last year.
100%. And one of the things I talk about a lot is the fact that communities don't get built just because people like connecting and sharing knowledge. It's also because they need people who have experienced the thing that they're trying to do. And no matter how well you train your support agents and how many resources they have or how good your AI is, people are still going to want to talk to someone that's done the actual thing that they're trying to do. And so all of the best recommendations and knowledge base articles and things like that in the world cannot replace hearing from somebody who's been through the thing and can tell you what to look for, you know?
I love that. So aside from kind of day-to-day, is there anything exciting happening in the world of community and Zendesk which you can share with us for 2024 before we wrap up?
You know, this past year has been really exciting. I mentioned that we launched our user groups about a year ago, and so those are continuing to grow. In fact, we've got new groups coming on every month. We just had one launch that's all about AI, and so it's a group of people that are going to get together once a month and just talk about AI for customer service and how they're using it and all of those pieces. Our brand ambassador program launched in March, and so I think that this next year is really going to be about just expanding the reach of those programs and growing them and seeing what's coming. We also have some exciting plans for our online community that I can't share too many details about yet, but it should be a really good year, especially when, you know, I was talking about like, how do we make things easy for people to connect and how do we bring this all together? And we're working some big projects to make sure that we're putting our money where our mouth is and making sure that it is really easy for everybody to connect with one another. So we've got all of those pieces. The podcast is going to be ongoing, so lots of exciting guests there. Yeah, I think you're just going to see a lot of growth and a lot more opportunities for people.
Fantastic. And is it LinkedIn or Twitter or somewhere else, which is the best place to kind of follow along with your story?
For the most part, LinkedIn is where we do a lot of sharing and what's going on. And I'm always happy to connect with people there directly. And yeah, that would be the best spot.
Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for being involved in the report. We really appreciated your wisdom and your insights into what you brought that. And yeah, thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate it.
It was an honor to get to be part of the report. And thank you for having me today. I've loved our conversation.
Well, until next time, we will we'll wrap things up, and I will be back next time on the Digital Community Leaders Podcast. Thank you.